This is Willie Terry, your Romney labor correspondent. I recently attended a virtual conference given by the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. It was their 50th annual legislative conference, and it was held virtually this year due to COVID. Usually this conference is held in person in Washington, D.C. I attended a very interesting workshop discussion that was led by Senator Cory A. Booker of New Jersey. And that workshop was entitled Food Justice, the State of Food and Nutrition in the Black Community. And in this segment, I want to share with you some of the dialogue and discussion that came out of that workshop. Food Justice, the State of Food and Nutrition in the Black Community. And I hope you find these comments interesting too.
And so I want to turn to the panelists, Tambra, Karen, Jasmine. I want to ask each of you to please just, maybe each of you can give 2 to 3 minutes of an opening statement that highlights your own personal journey and then your current assessment of the food and nutrition situation in Black communities, or how do you see it? Maybe Tambra, can we start with you?
Thank you so much for the wonderful introduction, Senator Booker. I'm hailing from Washington, D.C., but my home is Oklahoma, a place where hunger we know all too well, where my grandmother, who died from complications of diabetes and had a pacemaker, along with my grandfather of 2 strokes on my mother's side, is why I do the work that I do and why I do the advocacy as a mother, as the founder and CEO of WANDA, Women Advancing Nutrition, Dietetics, and Agriculture. And with me, I have little WANDA. Little WANDA has been the inspiration behind this work because it is the women and the children that center the work for us. We believe that when we think about the world that little WANDA operates in, it's one where her zip code determines her life expectancy more than her genetic code. Here in Anacostia, the life expectancy is 20 years shorter than that of Cabin John in Maryland. Also, the streets that little WANDA operates in and walks to school, she sees more junk food advertisements, more liquor stores than farmer markets. She sees more fast food outlets and advertisements than she sees more community gardens. She does not encounter nutrition literacy in her school. She does not see the opportunity of representation in children's videos that look like her to say that nutrition matters. She is the reason why I created her to inspire my children, Elliot and Ruby, who my daughter now will be 11 this month, and who has turned vegan. She calls herself a Regan. Ruby has determined her new branding is Ruby's version of veganism. And for me, it is amazing to see how the work that I do has, first off, touched the lives of my very children, as well as the children in my community, as I've seen myself married between a Mary's Poppins meets Harriet Tubman of nutrition, of encouraging our children to believe that they can become the food heroes that we need. Frederick Douglass said in his memoir, My Bondage, My Freedom, in 1855, published, food has been weaponized, and we must take the power back in food today.
Amen, amen. Karen, could you give a little introduction? I didn't know I was introducing two women there. WANDA is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful part of of your team, Tambra. But Karen, go ahead.
Yes, my name is Karen Washington. I tell people I'm a farmer, an agitator. I grow food. I feed people body and mind. I've been growing food for over 37 and a half years. You look at the gray hair in my head. I started first growing food in my backyard. My relationship to food was that it was grown in a grocery store and the fact that my mom was a good cook. It wasn't until I started growing my own food and tasting it and seeing the effect that it had on my 2 children that I started to question the food system. Across the street was an empty lot. Can you believe that? New York City at one time had 15,000 vacant lots, mostly in low-income neighborhoods and neighborhoods of color. Those that could move, they call it white flight. Those that remained were Black and Latino people coming together to turn those empty lots into community gardens. Professionally, I was a physical therapist. I did physical therapy for 37 and a half years. And most of my patients were Black and Latinx. And most of them grew up on farms and had gardens, but now was succumbing to type 2 diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. And so the question I would ask myself is that in the greatest country that we live, where we grow enough food and we waste enough food, that food is not getting down to the people that need it the most. And I also looked at where I live in the Bronx. I'm in the boogie down Bronx. Out of 62 counties in New York State, the Bronx ranks 62 as the most unhealthiest. We are surrounded by fast food, junk food, and processed food. And as a result, I have been a spokesperson and an agitator going around the country to educate our people in our relationship to food, health, and land. When you ask the problem about what is happening with our food system, well, the food system is broken, folks. It is broken, and it doesn't need to change. It needs to shift. And that shift needs to happen with power, power back into the hands of our community. And so I'm glad to be on this panel, and I'm glad to continue to have this conversation with the rest of my cohorts.
Thank you, Karen, so much. Jasmine, would you round it out for us?
Sure. So my name is Jasmine Leyva. I am a filmmaker. And so about 15 years ago, I decided to try a plant-based diet for purely cosmetic reasons, because that's where I was at 20. I wanted to look good and cut off shorts. But then when I actually started eating a certain way, I noticed a lot of the health ailments that I was suffering from, some of which were embarrassing and personal, things started clearing up. And I never knew that food was causing a lot of the things that I was going through, and also that food could heal a lot of the things that I was going through. So then I started doing my homework, researching a lot of what goes into the food that we're consuming. And I was reading the scariest stats that the food that we're eating is actually causing a lot of the degenerative diseases I'm watching my family die of every few years. And then what got even scarier for me is once I, you know, realized this, changed my diet, I would try to tell a lot of my Black and brown friends, and they would look at me like, oh, okay, so you moved to LA, now you want that white people stuff, now you're eating that white people food. And I was just like, wow, like our food system is so bad that it has gotten into the minds of our people, and they don't even identify healthy eating with themselves. So a large part of my work is looking at that dynamic and just marketing health to a group that has been left out of the conversation for way too long. And when I looked for answers, I didn't look for answers. I looked for answers in our history. I'm just like, okay, everyone thinks that Black food is soul food, which it is. You know, that kind of food got us through a very hard time. But at the same time, that's not the root of our food culture. So looking at the root of our food culture, it's fresh plant-based foods. And I thought it was really important to reconnect African Americans with that part of their history. So that's why I created the film, The Invisible Vegan, to just tell people that information.
Well, I feel seen by The Invisible Vegan and you as an artist. And I guess we're fighting an uphill battle here. We have a lot of these are very powerful corporations. And one of the things that they do is they target our communities. We actually know that a handful of multinational food companies that control the food systems, that our Black children are actually exposed to more food advertising than our white children are here in this country. And this fast food advertising, this junk food advertising, sugary drinks, snacks, candy, all these unhealthy products. I'm wondering if each of you could talk about, how this targeting affects our health and what do we need to do to put an end to it? And maybe we could start, Jasmine, where we left off, go in the reverse order. Jasmine, Karen, and Tambra, if you could talk maybe about that.
And I, you know, as far as that question, I do want to piggyback off of what you said in your open. And what I find funny, not even funny, sad, is that you see all of these foods marketed towards children. You see the children sipping the Kool-Aid, and then literally you see them blamed for it. Like when I hear the phrase war on obesity, and this is something where you're telling children the way you look is wrong. And we're telling them that in order to help them, but it's just like, but they're being set up to fail. They're given nothing but unhealthy options. So why isn't the war on these advertisements? Why isn't the war on big food companies? So I think we just need to really shift the blame.
Excellent. Hey, Karen, what do you think about that?
This goes way back to alcohol and cigarettes, back in the day when they were targeting mostly Black and Latinx communities. And now you have food, like Tamron said, is being used as a weapon. And so for me is that we need to sort of call out these food companies. Can you imagine only a handful of people control our food system? We have 7.8 billion people on this earth, and we have a handful of corporations, namely white men, controlling our food system. And the number one target is our children. And so how do we fight back? Well, number one, we need to talk about ways of limiting the amount of food companies, stores, fast food restaurants that's in our neighborhood. I propose zoning. I propose zoning as we do in terms when it comes to drugs. We should do food zoning to limit the amount of fast food restaurants within a particular area. Also, we need to educate our community. And I think Jasmine did the right thing. We need to educate our community to understand as Black people, we were the ones that were brought here, not because we were dumb. We were brought here because of our knowledge of agriculture, which is not taught in the school education process. We were always taught that we were victims of slavery. No, we brought here seeds in our hair. We were the ones who did agricultural systems, crop rotations, the culinary food that we eat. We were the ones, but yet we don't get credit. And I think if young people, I try to talk to young people, to educate themselves exactly how you got here. You got here on the shoulders of kings and queens that brought the knowledge of agriculture. And now as we moved away from the land, you can see what has happened to our dietary needs.